Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you're having a great day. Our mission here at Open Your Eyes is to help all of us open our eyes a bit more to the possibilities and realities all around us. And that includes the reality that you are filled with immense potential to reach your goals. So today, wherever you are as you listen to this podcast, I hope you get a new perspective of how you can think and live better. And if this podcast inspires you a bit, please share it with a friend. Pretty easy. Hit the share button, include a word of encouragement, and it just may be what they need in their life today. Many years ago, during my PhD studies on adult and human development, my major professor and I published a paper entitled Leader as Potentiator. The purpose of the paper was to lay out an argument for leadership in which the leader focuses exclusively on the future potential of the follower. And in the course of writing this paper, we started to build off of research my major professor had pursued years earlier, which he called the four heavies. The four heavies were called heavy because they are the negative tools that are used by many leaders and parents. I've used them many times. But the long-term effect of using the four heavies is extremely unhealthy. So today, I wanted to talk about the four heavies, and perhaps by doing so, it can help you in your leadership and parenting. Let's get started. In ancient Greece, sculptures evolved from rigid human form to more natural-looking representations of the human figure. And many of these sculptures were made from bronze. And there's a legend that the way these sculptures were able to take on such detailed human form was because underneath was a more detailed statue of gold. That statue underneath the statue was of more value. Now, whether that legend is true or not, the lesson is a good one, that underneath the surface, we all have a richer, more valuable person. So when leading, I've learned that the best leaders focus on the value, the potential lying in wait inside those who are on their team. And when we see this value in the other person, we avoid using the four heavies that we're going to talk about today. When we see this potential, it's natural to lead genuinely and authentically. Don't believe me? Well, hold in your mind a picture of your child's potential, of who they can be, and see if your way of leading and communicating to them is different when you hold on to that view in your mind. You will lead and parent differently. This is just one of the ways we can avoid using the four heavies. Now, the four heavies are manipulation, intimidation, coercion, and deceit. And we all use one or more of these in our leading from time to time. Anna, a 34-year-old teacher, sought therapy for chronic anxiety and difficulties in her relationships. As she went to therapy, she started to unpack her childhood. Anna's mother had been overly present in her life and consistently used guilt and emotional manipulation to control Anna's behavior. If Anna didn't follow her mother's advice or comply with her requests, her mom would respond with statements like, "I guess I'm just a terrible mother who doesn't deserve love," or, "After all I sacrificed for you, this is how you treat me?" Her mother's tactics were obvious, but her mom used consistent manipulation to get her way with Anna. And these guilt-inducing tactics made Anna feel responsible for her mother's emotions or problems, leading Anna to form the habit and way of thinking in which she would prioritize others' needs while neglecting her own. And the result of years of this subtle emotional and mental programming was that Anna developed a deep fear of confrontation and an overwhelming need to please people, even to her own detriment. In her relationships, she often overextended herself and suppressed her own opinions, fearing rejection or guilt. And this led to depression and her inability to face her own emotions in a healthy way. The lack of a healthy give-and-take relationship with her mother created the inability to have a healthy give-and-take relationship in other parts of her life. Soon, with therapy, she was able to recognize these behaviors, that they were rooted in the childhood manipulation she experienced, and she started to learn how to live a healthy life. Manipulation often has, at its core purpose, to coerce the child or person into feeling pressured to change his or her thoughts, behavior, or feelings to meet the demands or expectations of the manipulator. I get this. I've had 5 children and 12 grandchildren. Half of these grandchildren are under the age of 5. When it's time to go home and a 3-year-old throws a tantrum because they don't want to go or comply, the easiest thing to do is to manipulate or coerce in order to deal with their unreasonable behavior. And to make matters worse, this always happens when you as the parent are hungry or tired of them. So most of us, including me, have used manipulation or coercion to get the immediate result that we're looking for. I lead an organization, and when things get stressful or overly busy, it's easy to turn to manipulation or coercion to get what you want and to save time or effort. But here's what I've learned. When we use any of the 4 heavies, which again are manipulation, intimidation, coercion, or deceit, which are effective in the short term, we lay a groundwork of patterns in the mental construct and emotional makeup of other people. We also start to create the wrong kind of culture on our teams. Marcus, now 42, is a successful engineer, and he was raised by a father who believed in tough love. His father used yelling, harsh punishments, and rigid expectations to control Marcus's behavior. Mistakes, whether academic or athletic, were met with intense criticism and cold silence. When Marcus brought home a B on his report card in the 7th grade, his father made him sleep outside for a night as punishment, telling him, "You want to act like an animal, you will live like one." Though Marcus became highly successful professionally, he suffered from chronic insomnia, perfectionism, and an internal voice of self-criticism. He described a lifelong fear of failure and tendency to isolate during stressful periods. He also struggled with expressing emotion. He had been taught that vulnerability was weakness. So in therapy, Marcus explored how his father's intimidation taught him that love and approval were earned only through excellence and obedience. This helped him begin to unlearn the belief that he had to be perfect to be worthy. In a 2002 meta-analysis of a variety of research, Elizabeth Gersoff found that corporal punishment was associated with various negative outcomes, including poor mental health and increased undesirable behaviors in children. This included increased anxiety, depression, and hostility, as well as problems with emotional regulation like heightened or blunted reactivity to stress. Now, I can personally attest to this because I experienced it myself. Research suggests that harsh parenting can disrupt the development of healthy emotional regulation in children by impacting brain structure, development, and function. Beyond immediate emotional distress, studies show that coercive discipline can lead to long-term problems with antisocial behavior. Now, it's also important to note that parents' own stress and emotional regulation difficulties can contribute to their use of coercive discipline, creating a cycle where children's behavioral problems exacerbate parents' stress and lead to more harsh parenting. Here's the point. When we're born, our brains are like a construction site, full of potential but not yet fully built. And as we grow, our brains build connections between and among billions of neurons. These connections form based on our experiences and subconscious or conscious meaning-making. So in the early years, especially the first 5 to 7 years of life, this is critical because the brain is developing faster than it ever will. This is the time when we learn how to regulate our emotions and build relationships. If parents use manipulation, in which a parent thinks or says, "If you don't want to do what I want, I'll make you," what happens is the child's brain learns that love and approval are conditional, making it hard to trust themselves or others. When we use intimidation to emphasize I'm louder, stronger, and scarier, so you better obey, the result is in the child's brain development, it activates the amygdala, which is responsible for detecting fear. When the child is often afraid, their brain stays in fight or flight mode, even when there's no danger, and this creates anxiety, always being on edge. trouble calming down, or emotional shutdown. When we use coercion as our tool of getting our way, we essentially say, do what I say or else. Now, I've used it and experienced this as a child, parent, team member, and leader. It's something we have all likely used from time to time. Coercion uses fear or punishment to force behavior. When we use this as parents, instead of learning why something is right or wrong, the child just learns to obey to avoid consequences. Oftentimes, as leaders or parents, we're tempted to also use deceit to some degree or another. You've experienced this when you're tempted to tell a white lie rather than face the difficult truth with another person. We twist the truth or keep secrets to get a result. We promise things to our kids we know we won't do or misrepresent the facts to team members in order to get our way. The result is obvious, with a lack of trust that comes our way. Lena, 29, struggled with trust and emotional intimacy. She came from a household where her father routinely lied about finances, family issues, even personal values. He made promises he didn't keep and rewrote history to avoid accountability. When Lena discovered that her father had been fired from a job due to misconduct, he insisted he had quit to spend more time with his family. Later, when she questioned family stories that didn't line up, she was accused of being ungrateful or crazy. Lena constantly second-guessed her own memories and judgments. In relationships, she expected betrayal. She also found it hard to trust herself, fearing she was too gullible or suspicious. With help, she began rebuilding her sense of reality and learning that her instincts weren't flawed, just chronically invalidated. She learned to identify narcissistic manipulation patterns and set healthy boundaries. So, it's important to consistently model behavior that shows others how to function in healthy relationships. Now, we've been talking a lot about children, but we're still developing patterns in our brains as adults. So, the way we lead teams is also important. I've learned to keep this in mind in times when I'm tempted to use one of the four heavies. I think to myself, I'm programming the other person's brain connections by the way I react and behave. So here are some healthy alternatives to the four heavies. First, focus on the potential of the child or team member. See them for who they can become. I found this to be incredibly powerful. It allows you to forego focusing on the immediate circumstance and instead focus on how to help the person reach their potential. Now, I have an adult daughter who, when she was younger, was exceptionally opinionated about almost everything. Often her opinion caused her to make decisions that were poor decisions. I could see her decisions were poor. I tried to help her see what she was doing, but she resisted. Now, I could have used one of the four heavies in the name of helping her avoid mistakes. But when I focused on her potential, I could see that there was learning and letting her make her own decision. And the decision at the time wasn't life or death. She learned from the decision, and it helped her gain a level of humility and trust that I had the best interest in her at heart. Now, when we're tempted to use manipulation, another useful tool is to take a step back and ask, what type of behavior do I want to model so that my son or daughter or team member sees how a healthy relationship works? This mindset allows you to stay calm and model composure. We can, in the face of emotion, remember that our calm gives the other person a chance to check their emotions as well. Being calm has power. When we aren't calm, the other person begins to make associations from our behavior. Often, wrong associations, but calm allows them to process and make meaning in a safe atmosphere. Being calm invites reasoning and thinking. For example, my daughter was at my house yesterday with her 4-year-old autistic son. He'd been swimming and didn't want to go home, a normal emotional reaction. He was crying and being uncooperative. She has incredible skills and rarely uses manipulation or coercion in her approach. She wants him to see positive emotional behavior, so she waited patiently. Now, I was there talking to her, and I asked Johnny, my grandson, twice if he wanted to take a treat home with him. After the second ask, he looked at me, and we walked to the pantry. There is Grandma's stash of treats, and he selected a push-up pop. He then walked to my daughter and said something extremely advanced for an autistic four-year-old. He said, "Okay, Mom, I feel better now." I was surprised at what a little time did to heal the situation. My daughter could have picked him up crying and carried him to the car and locked him in his car seat, something I would have done, but she used a little time to program into Johnny that there's a healthier way to deal with emotions. Sometimes we all need a little space, don't we? And remembering this in the moment of emotion is important. A few years ago, I had a person working for me who had several different ways of seeing and doing things. As a leadership team, we worked on strategy, and we were trying to move in a new direction, and she didn't quite agree. After one meeting, she came into my office and started to yell and angrily tell me the things that I was doing and the changes that we were making were wrong. I listened, and as she got angrier, I could feel my emotions rising. It's pretty normal. As she continued, I listened, and I remembered that her view is a legitimate view. She's entitled to it. As she persisted for many minutes, I finally asked her, "Could you do me a favor? Would you mind if we just put a pause on this conversation? It's clear you feel passionately about this, so let's do that, and then let's get together again to discuss it." She was willing, and in the next discussion, she thanked me for the way I reacted. Here's the point. We all need a little space or distance from time to time, and time is a great teacher, so use this as much as you can. As parents, we've all experienced the absurdity of yelling at our kids to stop yelling, or angrily yelling at your son to be kind to his sister. As a leader of a team trying to get results, we often don't take time for people but expect them to take time for people. So, one talent we can all adopt is to try to do what we expect. Another suggestion is this, to try to really understand. Sometimes people just want to be understood. Sometimes people are tired or hungry or overwhelmed or just finding out where they're coming from is the best way to move forward. And let's just pause for a minute. After talking about all of these things, it can sometimes start to feel overwhelming, all the things we have to remember to be a good leader. It really can be. So we have to give ourselves a little bit of grace and remember that we're all just improving in the process. You know, I remember reading that the emotional parent instills feelings of instability and anxiety in their kids. The driven parent stays busy trying to perfect everything but doesn't give their child the emotional time they need. The passive parent avoids dealing with anything upsetting and doesn't instill grit or courage in their kids. And the rejecting parent is withdrawn, dismissive, and derogatory. As I read, and the list went on, I started to think, wow, I really messed up my kids, or I really lead my team poorly. And the truth is, none of us are perfect. We may be too emotional or driven or passive, and you know what? It's okay. The point of this podcast today is to encourage us to work a little bit to remove the four heavies from our toolkit of parenting and leading, and to replace them with more healthy tools. In my doctorate studies, it always amazed me how the development of healthy adults and healthy organizations was similar. Organizations take on a culture just like people take on a personality. For example, in 1998, the number six company on the Fortune 500 list of largest companies was Enron. The company had started from a utilities merger and had, in 4 years' time, grown in size by 750%. The problem was that much of this growth was achieved by manipulating accounting practices to present a false image. As the deceit took over, the reporting, the hubris of the CEO, and many others inside the organization extended to other things: outlandish joint ventures, loose corporate governance, huge stock options. At one point, the CEO had $659 million in stock options, and the CFO had $174 million. Extravagant spending was rampant throughout the company, especially among the executives. Executives had large expense accounts and were paid sometimes twice as much as the competitors. For a time, investors and employees were enthusiastic and confident. However, Once the truth surfaced, the company collapsed. The long-term result was not only the downfall of Enron, but a broader skepticism towards corporations and leadership. And the fallout was enormous. Widespread public outrage, new accounting and banking regulations. Enron's auditors, Arthur Andersen, went out of business. It resulted in the passing of a financial reporting act called Sarbanes-Oxley, and many other regulatory changes happened as a result. And regular people, pension funds, and others lost billions of dollars. Enron's culture, over time, took on the behaviors and tendencies of its leaders. Imagine the change in culture if Enron's leaders avoided deceit and selfishness instead. Enron would still be one of the largest and thriving companies in the world today. Another example is Wells Fargo. It had an account fraud scandal. Wells Fargo leadership set priorities to reach growth at any cost. And driven by unrealistic sales targets and a culture of pressure, employees followed their lead and opened millions of unauthorized accounts. Although the actions of low-level employees received the most media attention, investigations revealed that the root cause lay in the leadership culture that emphasized results over integrity. And over time, this created a culture of abuse and became embedded in the organizational DNA. According to a 2021 Gallup study, poor leadership is among the top reasons people leave jobs. When individuals feel manipulated or unsafe, they seek healthier environments. Moreover, fear-based leadership often leads employees to no longer offering honest feedback or innovative ideas because they fear retaliation. We've all learned that following a positive person is so much fun. A few years ago, the company MetLife implemented an aptitude test before hiring salespeople. They found that the aptitude test helped predict the success of employees. But then they added a second test, a positivity test, and the results were astonishing. Based on that test, MetLife hired people who scored extremely high on positivity. And this is where it gets interesting. Those sales reps who scored high on positivity but failed on the aptitude test still outperformed those who passed the aptitude test. And they did so by 21% in the first year. They then outperformed the others by a massive 57% in year two. The data was indisputable. Positivity heavily correlates to predicting a person's success, even if they lacked aptitude. Now, positivity in leading can and does make a significant difference. Another powerful skill, contrary to the four heavies, is empathy. Empathy starts with thinking about the other person's circumstances or their challenges and frustrations before your own. Recently, at the University of Rochester, 72 undergraduates were placed into pairs with the opposite gender. After spending a certain amount of time with the other person, they were asked to rate the person on several characteristics. Only one factor, other than physical attractiveness, increased the desire to be closer to the other person, and that factor was empathy. How well the person listened and empathized caused the highest amount of attraction for both men and women. When you feel someone understands you, it's electric. It's effortless. It's simple. Ron Howard was born in Oklahoma in 1954, and his parents had average acting careers. At age five, his family moved to California, and Ron landed a role in The Andy Griffith Show. He was there as a young boy for 8 seasons, and that role led him to Happy Days, where he spent another 8 years. By the age of 12, he was making a six-figure annual income. Now, growing up around lights and cameras and microphones, many child stars crumble under the control of pushy parents or greedy adults in the entertainment business. But this wasn't the case for Ron and his brother. Ron's brother Clint said, "What spared Ron and me from becoming Hollywood casualties are the values Mom and Dad instilled in us. The Howards never lived in a flashy house, nor did they go on extravagant vacations. Their idea of fun was simple, playing baseball and ping pong and watching professional wrestling." This would have a lasting impact on Ron Howard. He focused less on himself, despite all the trappings of a successful career, and worked on his empathy skills. A petite redhead named Cheryl Alley took a seat in front of Ron in English class. because she hadn't been allowed to watch television as a child, she'd never seen the Andy Griffith Show. She was attracted to Ron because of who he was. They dated in high school, were later married, and they've remained married since. Ron said he looked at his parents and saw how they chose to live and how happy they were, and he redoubled his efforts to do the same. After Happy Days, he shifted his work to directing. As a director, his movies include Far and Away, Cinderella Man, Apollo 13, Da Vinci Code, Solo, A Star Wars Story, and a host of other movies. He's one of the most sought-after and attractive directors in Hollywood because of who he really is, and that's because of who his parents were. So, as we end today, consider how you can avoid the trappings of using the four heavies and create a healthy place for your children and team members to grow. And watch. You will be a more effective leader, have more satisfaction, and make a real difference in the lives of other people. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.